Paul, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we're going to take an in-depth look at the truth behind what is occurring in Venezuela. We've been led to believe by the American media that the socialist government of Maduro, and formerly of Hugo Chavez, has caused mass privations, starvation, and unfortunately, the people are eating grass. Now, that's how bad it's been. But what if that's not true? What if it's not even a socialized government, but rather a mixed government, where there's plenty of entrepreneurship and corporations? But those are the people who are angry because, unlike before Chavez, they controlled everything. Now they don't. And what if there's millions upon millions of Venezuelans who live normal lives? And what about all the poor that Hugo Chavez was the first person in decades to actually concern himself with? What if the entirety of the American media, left and right, has lied about this? What if they've been nothing more than people who've aligned themselves with the corporate media for a need for regime change? On the phone from California right now is Abby Martin, and Abby is one of our leading international voices among younger American journalists and media activists. She's the host of the investigative documentary news program, The Empire Files, that was aired on Pan-Latin American Television, Telesur, TV English, out of Caracas, Venezuela. And The Empire Files features hard-hitting investigative history and insights into subjects ignored by mainstream corporate media. Earlier, Abby was the host of Breaking the Set on Russian television, or RT, and she is a founder of the organization Media Roots that supports citizen journalism and serves on the board of the Media Freedom Foundation, which manages Project Censored, which airs on the Progressive Radio Network. She also co-directed the film 99%, the Occupy Wall Street collaboration. Older Empire Files episodes can be viewed at theempirefiles.tv and on YouTube, and Abby's personal website as an accomplished visual artist is abbymartin.org. Nice to have you with us today, Abby.
So great to be back on with you, Gary.
Let's take a look at the truth of what's going on in Venezuela. And since you were with Telesur and have spent time in Venezuela, before and after recent U.S.-led attempt to oust Maduro from his presidency, I'd like to have you begin by debunking the images the Trump administration and both parties in the mainstream media, including MSNBC, and increasingly independent organizations are painting to the American public. And perhaps you saw Max Blumenthal's recent video on YouTube visiting a thriving Venezuelan mall, barely distinct from any upscale mall in the United States, and humorously looking for socialism, which he couldn't find. So begin there by unveiling the lies or distortions or half-truths of the pictures and words that are stated, and all the neocons now even getting accepted on liberal media, and that there's a deep humanitarian crisis unfolding, and it's because of Venezuela and its president and socialism, and we need to go in there and oust the president, and the American public seems supportive of this because the media is telling them it's the right thing to do. Almost reminds me of 2003 and rockets going into Iraq and Baghdad because of weapons of mass destruction. So the form is yours.
Right, Gary. It is quite fascinating to see kind of a media study and a media analysis of, you know, a perfect case study of fake news, frankly. You know, unlike North Korea, which is closed off, hard to verify reports coming out of there, Venezuela is not. And I really consider this a severe case of journalistic malpractice going on, where these journalists know better, they can confirm what they're saying, and they choose to manufacture consent for Trump's illegal criminal coup. I have never seen anything like it. It's actually more egregious than the Iraq War. At least that propaganda made a little bit more sense. 9/11 was still fresh. At least we had some sort of pretense of WMDs. This is completely out of the blue. Venezuela poses zero threat to us. It is disgusting what is going on. And as you said, this is being parroted by corporate media across the board. The neoconservative you know, wing of the media, the Fox Newses, the Breitbarts, the InfoWars, they're all painting this as a socialist failure. You know, this humanitarian crisis is all the fault of socialism, this despot Maduro. Then you have the liberal wing of the corporate media, the MSNBCs, the Daily Beasts, the Voxes, that essentially parrot the same thing. It's a humanitarian crisis, maybe not caused by socialism, but they say we need to intervene. It's up to us. Still with that running with that with American exceptionalism, that we are the benevolent empire who needs to go in and save other countries, right? Not mentioning very crucial framework in this story, which is that the U.S. empire has its sights on Venezuela since the election of Hugo Chavez, has been covert and overt warfare, regime change operations, coup attempts, assassination programs. The list goes on and on. Tens of millions of dollars of funding the opposition to foment regime change. National Endowment for Democracy, USAID, all these CIA regime change front groups that the U.S. empire is working through to try to foment, quote-unquote, unrest, right? The same thing that it claims that people who are just doing activism here at the bidding of the Russian, you know, Russian state. So that's what's been happening in Venezuela. And it's just fascinating to me that all the politicians have lined up as well. All the politicians have lined up. All these pseudo-progressive allies, Elizabeth Warren, AOC, they are running cover for Trump's coup as well. They're saying, let the aid in, without understanding or expressing the fact that the aid shipments is part of the coup. That's the second stage of the coup. When the initial coup failed, they're trying to do it through the aid. I just can't wrap my mind around why people cannot take a firm stance against Trump, Donald Trump, racist, xenophobic bigot extraordinaire, reality star. All of a sudden we think he cares about human rights with his gaggle of war criminals. John Bolton, who led us on a catastrophic war in Iraq, killing a million Iraqis. Elliot Abrams, a ghoulish, vampiristic goon who hid weapons and aid shipments in the past. He's a literal war criminal, and we are trusting these men to save Venezuelans, right? At the same time, starving Yemenis. It's the most cynical, disgusting plot I've ever seen in my life. And let's go back. Let's go back to debunking these lies. I mean, I was on the ground in Venezuela just a year ago. Let's start with the fact that it's a starving nation, that there's a humanitarian crisis. That's not the case. We know what a humanitarian crisis is. We know what Gaza is, right? We know what Yemen looks like. This is not what's happening in Venezuela. If you want to look at the most impoverished region in the world that's also having you know, mass unrest, that's Haiti. And you can go to the IMF structural adjustment policies caused by getting them off of Petrocaribe, which was actually being helped and aided by Venezuela, the oil program that you know, the IMF forced them out of. So I was there on the ground. Anyone who's honest about Venezuela will tell you there is not a mass shortage of food. There is not mass starvation. There is a general shortage of food products, specific items that are produced by the oligarchs, by the capitalists in the country. These Trump ex capitalists who produce the paper products, several products in the food basket that the Venezuelan government actually tries to subsidize every month with a basket called CLAP that they give out to the barrios and the poorest communities in the area. So that's one falsehood, right? And that's not to mention the fact that these sanctions, the sanctions that Trump has implemented on Venezuela, he's slapped 70 or so sanctions. This is up from 6 or 7 that Obama slapped on. I mean, that was the beginning of the most crippling embargo that Venezuela has seen. It is asphyxiating their economy. We're talking about $20 million every day, $30 million every single day that they are losing from the latest sanctions on the oil. And the U.S. is pledging $20 million in aid. $20 million in aid? You're stealing $30 million from Venezuela on a daily basis. I mean, this is crimes against humanity. I spoke to the UN investigator, the UN rapporteur, Alfred De Zayas, who went to Venezuela. He was the first human rights investigator in 21 years to go. And he said, where is the humanitarian crisis? He submitted a report for the Human Rights Council, and no one paid attention to it. He said he was ignored by mainstream media. Well, are we surprised, Gary? I mean, this is just absolutely mind-boggling how people have lined up to manufacture consent for Donald Trump, the person that they, on one hand, will call the next Hitler, a mentally unstable potential dictator. But on the other hand, they all line up and support his neocon regime change operations. It really does kind of call into question this deep state apparatus that's a continuation between administrations, between political parties, that will sell these wars and basically the expansion of U.S. empire whenever the chance arises. Now let's talk about the fact that Maduro is allegedly a dictator, right? And that Juan Guaido is a legitimate president, and that this is constitutional. This is a coup wrapped in constitutional garb. And by the way, the 30-day interim presidency is up. I just saw Elliot Abrams, which is Nosferatu, come to life. He was just saying that, well, the interim presidency hasn't started yet because Maduro hasn't left yet. Really? So, therefore, by your logic, Juan Guaido isn't the president, nor he ever has been. So this is what's happening. Because the coup, all these stages have failed, they're trying to do everything that they can. We see this recent blackout that lasted for nearly a week. Well, look back at Salvador Allende as the CIA was trying to make the economy scream. Rolling blackouts were actually a feature of the CIA sabotage operation before installing the brutal dictatorship of Pinochet. So Juan Guaido is not constitutionally self-appointed. He was self-appointed by a small cabal in the National Assembly, kind of a rogue body that has not been acting in concert with the main government for over a year. They have just basically stalemated everything. It's kind of like, you know, when the Republicans stalemated everything Obama was trying to do. That's exactly what the National Assembly has done. So they are a defunct body that doesn't have legitimacy. And that's not up to us to decide what to do about. This kind of arrogance, this imperial arrogance coming from American citizens to say, you should do this, you should do that, that's for the Venezuelans to decide. So going back to this call for new elections and that Maduro's a dictator and Juan Guaido should be the president, there were elections last year, Gary. There were elections last year. Maduro won with 6 million votes. He trounced the next competitor with 5 million votes. We're talking about 6 million people coming out in a country, 30 million, 20 million eligible voters. The vast majority of people who voted for Maduro are Chavistas. They are part of the Bolivarian movement. It's a continuous struggle, obviously, to keep the social gains that they've you know, gained since the election of Hugo Chavez. I mean, we're talking about an election that the U.S. empire tried to beg the MUD opposition coalition to boycott because then they could deem the elections illegitimate. And that's exactly what they did. You had Mike Pence and Donald Trump begging Henry Falcone, who actually broke that opposition boycott and decided to run. They immediately expelled him from the opposition coalition, and the U.S. empire threatened to sanction this man, sanction him for the crime of running in an election. So that's where we're at. We're at this point where everything can be debunked. Everything is a complete blatant falsehood. And the media just continues to tout blatant lies. And not questioning anything. And this is beyond the corporate media, you know, as they bemoan Telesur and Russia Today as state propaganda organs, right? There's far more freedom at those outlets than there is at corporate media. It is uniform, lockstep, behind U.S. empire, behind U.S. militarism, and it is frankly horrendous what is going on to see them just time and again selling the propaganda for this coup. And I just wanted to say one other thing about this stage provocation on the border where they tried to ram these aid trucks through. Similarly to an ISIS attack. I mean, they actually encouraged these people to defect from the Venezuelan military, to ram their trucks through crowds of civilians. What we would deem as a terrorist attack here in America, they were celebrated as heroes. They were celebrated as heroes on the mainstream media. These people are now defected in Colombia. They have nowhere to go. They've outlived their usefulness. And so the Colombian authorities said, leave. Here's a map. Find your way out of here. And they're begging Juan Guaido to help them. But when this provocation happened at the border, when Marco Rubio and Ivan Duque, the fascist president of Colombia, they were all begging, you know, trying to stage this thing in kind of a last-ditch effort to get this coup going, it was shocking. I mean, you saw Guatimberos throwing Molotov cocktails. There was a Molotov cocktail factory on the other side of the border. They were throwing Molotov cocktails and burning the aid trucks. And you saw even Twitter moments, regime burns aid trucks, regime. I mean, this has been debunked immediately from independent journalists on the ground. It took the New York Times 2 weeks. I was frankly surprised that they even you know, redacted and said, yeah, or basically revised their narrative and said, yeah, actually, this was not the regime. This was the Guatimberos on the other side of the border. So, I mean, aside from that kind of retraction there, we have not really seen anyone kind of admitting the truth about this, Gary, and they just continue to perpetrate egregious lies, and they're just so desperate at this point. But at the same time, Donald Trump is such a monster. I think that his ego is just going to make him double down on this. I mean, I don't see how they're willing to give this up until the coup goes through.
Abby, when we look at Los Angeles and the streets of San Francisco, we see people who are in deep poverty. Many are drug addicts. Some have mental conditions. Others are just the circumstances of their life changed. But it would not be fair to spend time on the 56th Street blocks in Los Angeles that are just tents and people living there and say, this is Los Angeles. It's not. It's one part. Because just three blocks from there, you can suddenly be into very nice buildings, and half a mile from there, you're into multi-million-dollar estates. Tell us about the rest of Venezuela and the rest of Caracas to let people know that what they're showing on the nightly news, the empty shelves and people going through garbage bags, show us the rest of the society and how they're living, including poor people who are not in the main city.
Right, and good point. I mean, Venezuela is a heavily stratified. It's segregated into class lines, racial lines, very clearly, right? And so we saw, you know, people have called the recent protests, and basically every protest of the opposition has held since Hugo Chavez and subsequently Maduro, a revolt of the well-off. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's very visible. Anyone who's looking at the dynamics and the characteristics of the protests, because there are massive pro-government marches, just as there are massive anti-government marches. Of course, the pro-government marches are completely censored from the mainstream media. You will not see the Chavista support and mobilization in the barrios, in the poor areas outside of Caracas. Now, Caracas is the stronghold for the opposition. It is the whitest, most affluent area of Venezuela. And so that's where you're seeing Juan Guaido continue to have these calls for regime change and calls to get the masses in the streets. And you do see pretty large crowds being mobilized. But again, if you're going into these crowds and talking to people, a lot of them are white as me, wearing expensive jewelry, wearing expensive clothes. I mean, I talked to several of these people because, unlike corporate media journalists who are activists for the status quo and to protect U.S. empire, I actually went and got both sides of the story. I went and talked to some of these people in these crowds, and they were saying, I can't buy what I want to buy, Gary. I talked to one protester holding a grenade who, and you know, we know that these opposition protesters, the Guatimberos, they target a socialist enclave's maternity clinics, schools, they'll burn down food distribution warehouses. And I talked to one of them, why are you holding a grenade? And he said, I can't be an entrepreneur here. I can't be an entrepreneur here. So that really should shed some light on the motivations of who these protesters really are. It's not because they're starving and that they're living in a dictatorship. It's that they can't buy what they want, and they don't have the same power that they once had before the Socialist Party took over and started using the oil revenue to uplift the poor. Now, the rest of Venezuela is actually heavily Chavista. We're talking about a country that there's been estimates from 15 to 20% are Afro-Indigenous. And ask yourself, and anyone who's listening, ask yourself, when's the last time you saw an Afro-Venezuelan speaking on behalf of the country? Every time you see a Venezuelan lifted up in the media, it's pro-coup Venezuelans, white as snow, Venezuelan exiles either living in Miami or Bogota, who somehow claim to be speaking for the entire country. The rest of the Venezuelans have been rendered completely invisible. You go out of Caracas, and it is completely unbelievable. The spirit of Chavez is alive and well. Murals, just movements, community mobilizations of thousands of people that are involved in this process. And that's the most beautiful thing. You know, it's so disgusting to paint Chavez and the military as some, like, elite, corrupt cabal. You are erasing the 6 million Chavistas who are a part of the Bolivarian movement. It's not Chavez. Chavez is a figurehead. They will continue to survive with or without Chavez. He is a surrogate. he's a surrogate for their movement. And their movement is very, very alive, and the resilience of the Venezuelan people has been proven time and again, and that's why it's so difficult for the U.S. empire to enact regime change, despite pouring so much effort and funds into doing so. But it's a beautiful thing. I mean, Caracas is gorgeous. As you mentioned, it's you know, you can go to Skid Row and try to paint L.A. in the same way, and I live near Skid Row. I see how disgusting and horrifying it is that there's essentially people who are digging through trash, living in tents, cities, frankly, near where I live. It's a sick thing. And the richest country in the world, to have such abject poverty around me in a country with, you know, half the people are living in poverty here. The politicians don't talk about that. But in Venezuela, the poor are cared for. They're taken care of. That's what the opposition wants to upend. You look back at the 2003 coup when the U.S. fomented regime change and tried to overthrow Hugo Chavez at the barrel of a gun. There was a right-wing decree that overthrew the Constitution. I mean, they mandated measures to immediately denationalize the oil, overthrow all the social gains. You know, we're talking about a country that used oil revenue to provide free health care, free education, 2 million homes for people for free. Can you imagine? I mean, it's just astounding. It's astounding. And like I said, because there's all this economic sabotage and internal warfare going on with the capitalists and with the corporations inside Venezuela, it's not a socialist economy, it's a mixed economy. Because of this internal sabotage, the government has a program called CLAP, where they actually do take those products that are in mass shortage and do go out and try to provide those for the poorest communities. And that's, again, the cynical talking point that, oh, the poor are bribed with food. Can you imagine how disgusting that is to actually say poor people are bribed with a food basket, and that's why they keep voting for their own enslavement? So what is it? Are the poor people voting for Maduro, or is it a dictatorship where elections are rigged? I really can't keep track of the lies, Gary.
I appreciate those insights. I have some serious problems with the way the United States is portraying Venezuela as a socialist state. As you just said, it's a mixed economy. In fact, outside of the historical socialist states, which were really hybrids, they were in Russia, it was communism, Marxism / socialism. So you were provided with medical care, you were provided with food, you were provided with apartment, you were provided with work and education. We're all free. And you were guaranteed these, but in the same time, you had no freedoms in Russia during that period of time, Stalin's period and elsewhere. And they keep equating socialism with Marxism, with Castro's concept of a communist socialist hybrid, and the same thing with China under Mao. Today, you go to Norway, you go to Sweden, Finland, and what you see is it's a mixed economy. You have people able to do their own business, lots thriving entrepreneurship, thriving corporations, but they agree that they don't want a large military-industrial complex. They're not out regime-changing any of these countries. They have a high quality of life, one of the highest standards of education in the world is in Denmark, and in Finland also. And why? Because they don't mind paying a higher tax and a higher value-added tax so that they can have these subsidies, and they really are subsidies. The people are paying in for the time when they may need something, good to go to school, to have a medical procedure, and at least they have that. We, on the other hand, we pay minimal taxes, and then we don't look at what we're given for free. We don't pay out of our own pockets every day for our fire and police departments. They're part of the taxes that come from property taxes and other city taxes, state taxes. But that's socialism. And the corporate managers in America, the ones who got us in trouble, the big banks, every one of them, many of the big corporations who caused the 2007 crash, they were all subsidized. Now, I wasn't subsidized. You weren't subsidized. People losing their homes weren't subsidized. So socialism is thriving in the United States, but the corporate elites, especially on the right, don't want to call it socialism or safety nets to help the public. Because they want to believe that we're just one economy, a capitalist free market economy. We are a mixed economy, no different than Venezuela. So when you go back to Venezuela and you're calling it a socialist state and then pillaring the people that support that, And I'm asking, how can anyone at the New York Times and CNN who have qualified journalists, that they're not all compromised, they come generally with good backgrounds, good educations, why would they not call out the CIA and call out and challenge Abrams that you mentioned? He was convicted of war crimes, you know, for supporting the Contras that they called, you know, the like our founding fought. No, those were Somoza's National Guard, many of them originally, and they were murderers. But, and why won't they call out the people on the left who are supporting this intervention? Because many of those people on the left also supported the intervention of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and getting rid of Gaddafi in northern Libya. And look at that country today versus what it was. At one time, Libya, up until the coup, Libya was the number one country in that entire area of the world that had more freedoms and respect for women than any other Muslim nation. It had no debt. It had large gold reserves. He had created the largest human-made reservoir to support over 160 million other Africans with water. He had no crime. There were terrorists. They were in prison. And he had already retired for 4 years out of power. Everything was held in local assemblies. There were over 10,000 local assemblies in Libya where the local people made up their own rules. In fact, Gaddafi disagreed with some of them. He was against the death penalty. They overrode him. Local citizens did. And they had free education anywhere in the world if you couldn't get it there, free medical care. You got $50,000 when you got married. If you wanted to be a farmer, they bought you a farm. And Gaddafi stayed in a tent, and he was mocked for it, but no one ever asked, why is he staying in a tent? It wasn't because of that he was respecting something from his ancestry. He was respecting the fact that he promised that every Libyan would have a home before his father and he did, and that was the case. So he put ethics and the good of the common person ahead of his own self-interest. And for that, and a threat to no one except with the golden ear and wanting to get away from the U.S. dollars, the reserve currency, they killed him. And now that you can buy slaves in Libya and you can buy any organ of the body because the refugees are being killed. Has anyone in the liberal media, anyone, criticized Obama, criticized all the people who were instrumental in that, Gloria Nuland, and Hillary Clinton? Not a word. So it doesn't surprise me they haven't criticized the CIA, the National Security Agency, Bolton, or any of the others, neocons, in Venezuela. Your thoughts on why the media has been completely silent on looking at the so self-obvious coup to this democratically elected president?
Exactly. I mean, you know, the media can have this differentiation and divisions, you know, factions within the ruling class and the elite class that it is a part of, because let's not pretend that, you know, the media, basically it's all about access. I lived in D.C. for 4 years. I know exactly how it works. These journalists literally only care about access. And they all are the right-thinking journalists, right? I mean, you'd be remiss to think that journalists are hired and paid and told to lie. It's more that they are the right thinking. They're picked because they share that ideology of the ruling class. They share that American exceptionalism. They share the notion, that Sam Harris ideology, that when we do things in the world, it has the right and true intentions, that we are, you know, again, the benevolent empire, and we need to be the world's policemen. So I think that whenever you see, despite having these divisions, let's say in domestic policy and maybe, a press that likes to talk about Donald Trump and criticize him in a lot of fair ways, but when it goes to his foreign policy, you see the entire media apparatus line up and protect and provide cover for foreign policy for the U.S. empire, right? So when it came to, let's say, Trump's potential alliance with Kim Jong-un, him kind of pontificating about potentially removing troops from South Korea. Well, you saw the entire press in a tizzy, saying, oh my God, what is he doing? He's going to make us less safe in the world. I mean, that's actually, these people genuinely think that removing one of the 1,000 bases that the Pentagon has around the world, removing troops from, 70% of the world's countries, from maybe one of those countries, that's somehow putting us on a foot of instability, that we're losing our stronghold in the world. I mean, it's a sick, sick notion. You know, again, this hubris, this arrogance that we deserve to be occupying the planet. Look no further back from Pedro Carmona. I mean, the guy who declared himself interim president back in 2002 with the first coup against Hugo Chavez. You saw the New York Times glorifying this coup, glorifying him as a distinguished businessman supporting the coup. I mean, you saw the same talking points about Hugo Chavez when there was no doubt that it was free and fair elections, when the Jimmy Carter Center was saying it was the freest and fairest elections in the world. You saw the exact same rhetoric when the economy was booming, right? When Hugo Chavez had enough money to actually subsidize poor people's heating oil here after Hurricane Katrina. The narrative never changed. It was always Venezuela's a dictatorship and illegitimate leadership, and we need to overthrow it to save the people. So it is quite amazing to see that, right? That the propaganda framework, the propaganda playbook has never, ever changed, despite vast differences in the economic stability of what's going on now. Why is it that the media doesn't question these things? You know, the media calls me an activist journalist. I'm an activist journalist. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I wear my bias on my sleeve. I don't want U.S. imperialism. I want to curb back the U.S. empire. I think it's the largest purveyor of violence in the world. The Pentagon is the largest environmental polluter. So without this framing and context, what are we really talking about? But these quote-unquote establishment journalists, the holier-than-thou journalists who tell us, what to think and how to think, they are activists for empire. They are activists for maintaining the status quo. That's what they're designed to do. So again, you see, look no further than MSNBC, Jake Tapper and Don Lemon and all of these people basically were near tears when Trump decided to bomb Assad. I mean, this is what they do. This is what they love. Whenever there's militarism involved, whenever the president wants to do something like bombing a nation, like when he dropped the Moab bomb, I've never seen the corporate media so gleeful. It's almost like they had purpose, that they finally could line up behind their president. I mean, that's what they said. They said Trump finally became president, Gary, when he bombed Assad and when he dropped that Moab. I mean, how sick is that? Absolutely disgusting, right? But that's when you actually respect, again, a reality star bigot, racist, that when he bombs more brown people, that's when he's becoming president. So it is quite fascinating. I mean, looking at Libya, you're absolutely right about that. And you see the kind of sadistic interpretations of these things. You saw Marco Rubio, who's this Gusano lackey, bootlicker, who was staging these provocations at the border. He was getting increasingly desperate with his propaganda, and he actually took to Twitter and tweeted out a gory snuff photo of Muammar Gaddafi getting lynched and raped with a bayonet, that horrific, awful photo. And he tweeted that out as a clear and open death threat to the sitting president of Venezuela. And no one did anything. No one cared. Everyone was busy condemning Ilhan Omar for talking clearly and lucidly about a lobbying organization that has control over Congress. That's really, really shows you a lot of where our heads are at and kind of the bizarre, kind of topsy-turvy world that we're living in. I mean, that's how normalized violence is, and especially when it comes to mass violence carried out by the U.S. empire. We have normalized mass murder, war, and basically just genocide. And when you see sitting senators tweeting out snuff photos and death threats to presidents and no one bats an eye, we should probably ask ourselves what's going on.
I would agree. My last question deals with, obviously, the Democratic Party is being challenged from within today. Its leaders are unable to find any unity or send any coherent message outside of their attacks on Trump. And I'm also baffled how the Democrats have morphed into becoming the champions of the deep state. In the past, the Democratic Party served more or less as a dysfunctional sheepdog on the CIA and the National Security Agency and Homeland Security and the Pentagon. and the FBI. And at least it had voices opposing or criticizing our military interventions and mass surveillance and the lack of transparency endemic throughout our intelligence agencies. But now, with Trump against everything and everyone, the Democrats are aligning with the very agencies that habitually operate outside the law in the shadows. And your episode about Democrats praising the warmongering General Mattis is but one example, and they naively befriend and embrace the enemies of their enemies, and all of this being parroted on MSNBC by Rachel Maddow or on CNN. What is your assessment of this shift towards the right wing among rank-and-file Democrats, and is this not a way to actually strengthen the American empire, because this is where both parties are finding common ground?
Exactly. I have heard theories that this is kind of a long con, a larger strategy on behalf of the establishment to enlist trust again in these agencies that are criminal agencies that have carried out, you know, warrantless spying, assassination programs. I look at Spike Lee, or, you know, talking about having Mueller to save us. I mean, this is someone who is making movies, the Black Klansman. I mean, he knows about the assassination program. He knows about the police killings of Fred Hampton, the FBI surveillance of Black Lives Matter, of the Black Panthers. Why have we forgiven these people? Why have we retrusted these agencies? We know that they're committing, you know, crimes against humanity as we speak. So I have heard that this could be some potentially longer strategy to fold in, you know, the dissent and pressure valve that people are feeling under the Trump administration. Because, you know, every time that there's a large kind of civil resistance movement or social movements are being strengthened under something like a Trump phenomenon that we're seeing now, the Democrats have to fold in that activism and that kind of revolutionary spirit and co-opt it. And so what better way to co-opt that movement and that energy into the Russiagate fraud? And for the last 2 years, we've been told that at any moment, Donald Trump's going to be whisked away in handcuffs. So far, there hasn't been a smoking gun. I don't think there is going to be a smoking gun. It's almost impossible to attribute cyber warfare, cyber hacks. We know through the Vault 7 WikiLeaks cables that the CIA actually has a program that can attribute false hacking fingerprints to alleged adversaries of the U.S. government. We're talking about China, Russia, specifically Russia. So you have to ask yourself, what is really going on here? And why are the Democrats basically utilizing all of their energy into the Russia narrative when there are so many other things that they could be fighting Trump on? I mean, for example, Trump's a war criminal. Trump has escalated drone strikes 400%. Civilian casualties are up 250%. He just dropped a bomb on a refugee center in Syria after he said the war was over. Strikes have increased 30% just in the last month there. But we know the answer, Gary. We know why they're not attacking him on those things, because it's a house of cards. I mean, the second you pull that out, their entire they're all complicit in that. It's the same reason that Obama didn't investigate war crimes. It's because the same reason that Pelosi didn't want to impeach Bush, because she had signed off on the war crimes. She had signed off on the torture, the same reason that Obama didn't. You know, he had signed off on the warrantless spying program. He had signed off on the things that Bush was complicit in. So if they start to investigate themselves, then everything is going to fall apart. And so they have to maintain this pretense that, the stability, that they are strengthened still, and it is just really fascinating that here we have the Democrats basically telling us to trust the same people that led us into the Iraq War. I mean, I'm not living in a fishbowl. I remember who Robert Mueller is. I'm sure you remember who Robert Mueller is. I mean, he was leading the anthrax investigation, which was also a very suspect. I don't believe that we got the truth about that. These people should be tried at the Hague. And instead, we're being gaslit over and over again by the talking heads, by these establishment journalists who are saying, no, these are the people who we can trust. And again, I mean, maybe Trump is this kind of Trojan horse to bring us back to maybe opening our arms to the intelligence community.
I would add something a little different, but supporting your comments. I believe that one of the best things that could possibly happen is the Mueller investigation and all the Democrats supporting it, and the media, and it's almost 92% of the media support it. And the reason I believe that it is good is because it shows the deep state for what it is. It shows who the players are. There's now absolute irrefutable evidence that the dossier, Steele's dossier, was completely falsified, that they lied about the dossier, yet they submitted the dossier, including Comey and others, as if it were accurate, where they knew it was not accurate. Their own internal investigation showed it wasn't accurate. Steele, in a deposition, showed that it wasn't accurate. He was paid by the Russians, paid by the Democrats. He was paid by FBI. He got three people to pay him to do this stupid dossier. And all the while, the deep state was of the feeling that we need Hillary. Now, the question is, and I'll end with this, why would the deep state put itself in a position to create a major coup? I consider this a coup, where every major corporation in the pharmaceutical industry, the military-industrial complex, the banking community, the energy cartels, the big agra, all wanted Hillary Clinton. Knowing her background, that is simply meaning to me that they knew they could count upon Bill and Hillary Clinton and the people around them to serve their interest, but not the average person's interest. Where Trump, they didn't know what the hell he would do. And as you said, I think the same way about Trump as you do. But I also know that if it weren't for Trump, we would never know how deep the deep state is and how corrupt the FBI and the Justice Department are. But I also believe that in the next, and at least I'm told by my sources, in the next 4 weeks, we should start seeing indictments of some of the people who were part of the Trump was involved in collusion with Russia, that the people who were challenging Trump will themselves be exposed. And I believe that we'll have a major Donnybrook on our hands where we'll have insiders at the highest levels of government in the intelligence community being indicted. And there are now grand juries going on where the people who've been calling these shots are the ones who are now going to be exposed. That does not in any way, shape, or form exonerate Trump for being what he is, but what it shows is for all these decades, we've had the deep state playing us like fools. They controlled the media. And you'd have to go clear back to the Church hearings way back in the 1970s, where Frank Church, who never got elected after that, had the CIA, and the CIA director admitted they have over 1,200 people that the CIA could reach out to a journalist at the major networks and get them to do the story their way. So now we see how pervasive it is, and so therefore it showed his hand. And boy, when you realize we didn't have any freedom of choice, it didn't matter who we elected. If we elected Bush or we elected anyone else, Democrat or Republican, it was still the deep state controlling everything behind the scenes. And now we see that. And now once this report comes through and there won't be any collusion from what I'm told, then watch them try to backpedal and focus on something else Trump's done. And I think this should be a big wake-up call that had they voted like me with Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson or Ralph Nader, it'd get away from the two-party people and start getting to the independents that represent the people and populist issues. Then we have a chance out of this morass. Otherwise, we're sunk. Final comments from you.
Well, I agree with you in the sense that when Trump was running, obviously the Fortune 500 CEOs and the entire political establishment, military establishment, lined up to support Hillary Clinton. I think that she was a sure bet. Obviously, she had proved her loyalty, you know, overseeing Yugoslavia, the Libya, the Honduras coup. She bragged about that in her book, that she was basically a partnership, presidency with her husband. I mean, we're talking about like the Underwoods from House of Cards. I mean, she was not just sitting in the sidelines. She was overseeing things, and her husband destroyed the economy. He monopolized the media. He deregulated everything. So I think that people, were more privy to that, and there was a lot of reasons why she lost. But, you know, my whole thing was they're not going to let her lose. You know, I thought that was how they were going to play it. And after Trump won, I think that he proved his loyalty pretty quickly. I think that he was just too unstable. They didn't know. He wasn't a sure bet, obviously, like Hillary. They didn't know where he was going to go. They thought he was going to blow in the wind. He allegedly didn't have allegiances. He was self-funded. But I think he turned into the biggest and best puppet of the deep state that anyone could have asked for. I mean, other than this kind of faction, you know, this kind of warring factions within the intelligence community, he has served seamlessly to expand the empire. Again, I mean, the new base in Niger, the drone strikes, the weapons contracts. I mean, he has surged all of these Fortune 500 CEOs. He has surged the military-industrial complex to levels unseen. I mean, go back to the Reagan administration, the Star Wars program. What do you think this whole Star Wars, the next branch of the military, he's basically creating? This is PNAC blueprint come to life. So in terms of the military and expansion of empire, despite his rhetoric about, quote-unquote, ending the wars, which is really him just removing the troops that he himself added while, you know, increasing drone strikes and carpet bombing these areas, I don't really see anything in terms of standing up to the deep state or standing up to the U.S. empire in terms of Trump. I mean, if anything, he's just resurrected the worst deep state criminals. Elliot Abrams, John Bolton. I mean, these are neocon outliers that were actually too extreme, too crazy for the last couple of administrations. And now they're back in the fold. I mean, these are the deep state. So even though there are factions within the establishment, from the liberal wing to the neoconservative wing, I mean, yeah, there's warring factions. Of course they don't want Trump. Of course he's not stable as they would like him to be. They want someone who they can bet on a little more. I mean, Trump, on the other hand, is pissing off a lot of people. Do you think that they want mass unrest in the street? Do you think that they want social movements and people organizing themselves to stand up to the empire and actually try to organize, you know, third parties away from the two-party system? No. They'd much rather have someone like Hillary that can lull everyone to sleep, just like Obama did. And so there's a lot of reasons why the quote-unquote deep state or the political establishment as a whole does not like Trump, and they actually loathe the fact that he's in office. But it's not because he's standing up to the empire and that he's ending the wars. If anything, he just kind of makes the U.S. look buffoonish. He, you know, takes away the sanctity and dignity of the actual presidency. And we can't have that. I mean, we have to paint ourselves as, you know, the best and greatest in the world. So Donald Trump, being the leader of the U.S. empire, just kind of makes it a joke to the rest of the people who feel like it's their turn, like they've worked their asses off their whole lives to get to where he is. So how dare he take their place? But I think it's a lot more personal, and I don't think it's because he's really putting a wedge in anything in terms of the intelligence community. I mean, he's signed off on the warrantless spying program. He's spying on, you know, Black Lives Matter. He's spying on Antifa. So I don't see him doing anything other than certain factions of the deep state and certain factions of the political establishment wanting him to get out with the Russia thing and trying to indict him on that. But look, I've heard about these indictments going on for, again, 2 years, that Trump is about to round up people in handcuffs. I mean, you hear both narratives, right? That Trump is about to do these mass arrests, that Trump is rounding up the criminals. I'll believe it when I see it, but right now I feel like he is the best and greatest pawn that has ever served, and I fear the next 4 years, Gary, if we see a repeat of the 2016 election here.
I would agree. All I had to do is look at his cabinet to see that every single major neocon and corporatist were in positions. But that was also true for Barack Obama. In fact, we got the memo and a WikiLeaks showing that the person from Citicorp was giving Obama a list of the people who should be on his cabinet. Obama didn't select any of those people. He agreed to them, but it was Citicorp, one of the big banks that they bailed out. I think it was $2.2 trillion Citicorp got bailed out. And that was also controlled. The difference is that Barack Obama was not a buffoon. He was not an idiot. And nor was Hillary Clinton. She didn't have Obama's charm, but Trump has neither charm, and he is an idiot. So there's a big difference between the two of them. I don't think Trump could actually, if you caught him off guard, could spell the word coup. But we're in either case, I am glad that for whatever motivation, they've shown their hand. Because once it's shown, there's enough legitimate journalists, the Seymour Hirsches and Chris Hedges, yourself and others, who will pick up on this, just like it was Seymour Hirsch that showed us it wasn't Assad who was, you know, gassing his own citizens, and not in a wouldn't have done that. It was just a suburb of Damascus. It was what the people that we were funding, but the media would never accept that. To this day, the media refuses to accept that that Assad was not the sole perpetrator of these gassings, and yet we've interviewed people who've been on the ground, who've been there in the battlefields, and who told us the truth. In fact, one person said that that Assad, very unpretentious, he and his wife live in a regular apartment building. You could go right up and down the hallway. He doesn't have like 30 armed guards outside. He drives himself around. His wife takes kids to school each day. You don't see large guarded retinue around him. Now, we would never be led to believe any of this until we find from the people actually were there and interviewed them that that's true. So we have a very good way in America of painting our enemies in such a way that it eases our conscience when the demonization allows us to go in and kill them or drone them. And look, when was the last time in 3 years before this year, 3 years, you didn't see a story about our supporting Yemen's war with Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, not a story about the devastation and destruction to the children and the families, 19 million people starving, the largest cholera outbreak in the world that had been in Haiti, then it shifted there. And we were doing all that for them, their planes, their intelligence, and not a word out of the New York Times or MSNBC.
I'll leave you with this. I mean, again, the corporate media paints these state propaganda agencies as, you know, state organs of insidious propaganda that's fomenting radical discord in this country and you know, doing the bidding of dictators. Why is it? It makes sense that Russia paints the Russian perspective. It makes sense that Chinese TV paints the Chinese perspective. Telesur paints the Latin American perspective. Why is it that the U.S. Western media apparatus, funded by multinational corporations, subsidized by defense contractors, big oil, and banks, why is it that they echo the Pentagon line? Why is it that they paint the exact same propaganda being put out by the Trump administration if it is not a government run by corporations? I mean, it really does reflect that our government is a corporate state. It's an oligarchic corporate state run by banks, oil companies, and defense contractors. And that's exactly who owns it, who expresses it, and that's why the media apparatus is designed as an arm of the government to put out this line. And we really have to ask ourselves, you know, what does that say? What does that say about the quote-unquote, you know, freest media in the world, freest country in the world, when that media reflects exactly what the corporations want you to think?
I would agree. Abby, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary. You're the best.
Abby Martin, and you can see Abby's work by going to abbymartin.org. She's a very talented artist. And also for the files of the Empire Files, it's empirefiles.tv and also on YouTube. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day.
Hey, what's up now? Brother, what's up? This is a big party, man. Yeah, I can dig it. Stop right on.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs, don't punish me with brutality. Sister, talk to me, sister, so you can see, sister, oh, what's going on.